The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 7.
Talking about emptiness, and for example, I always talk about the emptiness of the bus. And when you think about the bus coming in and screaming at you, and the example I always give is that if the bus was from his own side, a nasty man, then the person next to you, when the bus is screaming at you, who doesn't like you, would find him bad, but they don't. They like him. Okay, they think it's great that he's screaming at you, and then you think it's bad. So therefore the boss is not self-existently good or bad, mean or nice. It depends on who's looking, right? Then sooner or later an intelligent person has to say, what about the boss himself? You know, is he self-existent or not? I understand that how two different people in the room see the boss is not self-existent. And I understand that that could be driven by their karma. But I want to go back one step to the boss himself. If I didn't have the karma to see the boss even be screaming, would the boss even be screaming? Would the boss even exist? You know, and the answer is no. Okay, the boss also is created by your karma. The raw data is created by your karma. What's that got to do with me? This is the step you take from thinking about the emptiness of me and thinking about the emptiness of my parts. Okay, I understand that how people feel about me is a projection and depends on their karma. I also understand that my own experience of me, you know, whether I feel depressed or not, whether I feel low self-esteem or not, etc., is also my projection. I understand all that. So, but what about my very existence? What about the fact that I was born into this world? What about the fact that I have a body? What about the fact that I'm having a mind right now? Are those self-existent? And to find that out, we were going into the parts of the person. And we discussed already the parts of the body. Okay, we got the body down to atomic particles, and then we figured out that even an atomic particle is a projection made upon the two sides of the atomic particle. Okay? There are always sides to a particle. No matter how small you get, there's always a right side and a left side. Because if the right side ever touched the left side, there wouldn't be any atomic particle. Okay? This is a famous proof in Madhyamika. There's four directions, east, south, north, west, and there's up and down, six directions in Buddhism. If atomic particles were so small that they had no diameter at all, then east would meet west. The two sides would actually be contiguous, and then there wouldn't be anything there. So it's impossible that you ever reach a point in the atomic particle where there are not, where you can't divide it into two. And as long as you can divide it into two, it has parts. And those parts are not the atomic particle. Okay? Any more than the pen, the parts of the pen is the pen, are the pen. They're not the pen. Because we practiced that. You looked at the colors and shapes of the pen, and you saw that those were not the pen, until you thought of them as the pen. So even when you get down to atomic level, there are no atoms. The body and your world and the chair you're sitting on is not made of atoms. It's not made of physical matter in the way you always thought of it. It's a projection. It can't be made of atoms because the pen is not made of its colors and shapes alone. Okay? So it can't be made of that. It's not made of that. Science is wrong. Okay? Science is wrong. There do not exist an objective reality called atoms. You know, so what's the point of saying that? Are you just trying to get everybody to go home and feel kind of, it's like a diet plan. You feel lighter than you did before because you don't exist of anything, you know? There's no more atoms. I mean, what's the point of talking about all this? If you realize that things are your projection of your mind, then you can change them. If things were atoms, you could not change them. And we're going to talk about that tonight, okay? You could not end suffering in the world if everything was atoms. It's only because they're not atoms that you can change the suffering of the world. We'll talk about it, okay? At this point, having finished his examination of the emptiness of the body and the parts of the body, Master Shantideva moves on to a very important part of a human being, okay? We divided the human being last week into mind and body. You know, we discussed the emptiness of the mind, the emptiness of the present moment, the unreality of the present moment. Okay? The present moment doesn't exist except for your projection. You are not the sum of all the present moments of your life until you think of yourself that way, forced to do so by your past karma. You are not the sum of your parts until you think of them that way. Okay? So we proved it with your body and we proved it with your mind. Now we go a little bit deeper. All right? We go to the five heaps or the five skandhas. Okay? You've heard the word heaps. Okay? Heaps. In Sanskrit, skanda. It's kind of, I remember the first few times I heard it was very confusing. I didn't know what they're talking about. Five heaps, you know. I have kind of a big tummy, but it's not like a heap, you know. And I don't see how my mind could be a heap, you know. And I didn't know what they're talking about. Five heaps, you know. Skanda does mean heap. In Tibetan, the word is pumbo. It's hard to get a good teaching on the five heaps. People have mistranslated them for years. They have been misunderstood for decades in the West. Okay, if you ever were able to get a Heart Sutra teaching, that would be the first thing the guy would cover. Okay, would be the five heaps. All right, and that's Pumbo. It's interesting that in the first chapter of the Abhidharma, they explain why they're called heaps. And that, to me, I was very happy when I found that. It's Pungdang Kego Rikidung Pumbo Keche Kamnam Yin. It's in the first chapter. Heaps are called heaps because they are piles of different things. Okay? Pung means to pile up things. Like when you're raking leaves in Tibet, your teacher would say, Pung, deso pungore. You know, make them into a pile. So it really is a heap of leaves. Okay? Pumbo really does mean heaps. It's not a bad translation. Okay? The translation's okay. It only, though, it's a very simple word for the parts of a person. Okay? Think of it as the parts of a person. I think sometimes it's even appropriate to translate it that way. Okay? It just means the five parts of a person. Okay? Well, then why do you call them heaps? Because each one of those parts has a lot of other parts, and that's all. Okay? That's the only reason. Pungdang Kego Riki Dun Pumukeji Kamling. That's the root text, Abhidhamma Kosha. Okay? That's all. You have five parts, and each one of them has a lot of stuff in it. And so it's called the five heaps. Okay? If you could understand the emptiness of each of your five parts or your five heaps, then you would automatically understand the emptiness of you. Okay? The day you see the emptiness of you directly, you're on your way out of samsara. You will be happy. You won't suffer again. Within seven lifetimes, you'll become a Buddha. Okay? Normally. All right? So, it's very important to understand the emptiness of each one of your parts. We did body and mind because that's simple. That was kind of easy. We're going to go deeper. Okay? We're going to go to, we got two parts of you. How about five parts of you? All right? What are the five parts of you? First one is your body, which is called sukh. In terms of the five heaps, sukh means body. Okay, your physical part of you. The physical parts of you are called sukhi pumbo, the heap of physical matter. Okay, sometimes sukh refers only to what you can see, but not when you're talking about the five heaps. Okay. Sorwa means your capacity to feel things. Your capacity, your ability to feel things. How many divisions? In scripture they say three or five. Okay? Three would be feeling good, feeling bad, and feeling in between. Okay? Five would be physical pleasure, mental happiness, feeling in between, mental unhappiness, and physical pain. Okay? You can divide it into three, you can divide it into five. Okay? You can divide feelings that way, those two ways. Okay? According to Buddhism, this is in the Abhidharma system, it's called Semgyesamgyu, means feeling never stops. Feeling never stops. When you're asleep, when you're unconscious, when you just died and you're in your bardo, feeling never stops. You're always feeling something, even if it's neutral feeling. Okay? Feeling is a mental function which never stops, cannot be stopped. For eternity you will feel. Okay? Buddhas also have sorwa. Buddhas also have five heaps. Okay? They just happen to be pure. Okay. Say dushe.
Dushe.
Dushe, the poor word has been much abused by translators, you know. And all volitional factors are stuff crap like that, okay? Dushe just means your ability to discriminate. This is good, this is bad, this is tall, this is short, he's my friend, he's my enemy, I like this, I don't like that, okay? Like that. It's just your ability to make discrimination, to make distinctions. Okay? Dushe.
I forget which one was volitional factors, but anyway. Okay. I'm going to skip number four for a second and go to number five.
Say namshe. Namshe. Namshe is just the fact that you're aware at all. You know? It's this weird thing. You get up in the morning and you're aware. Okay? It's consciousness itself. Six general types. You are conscious of colors and shapes through your eye. You are conscious of sounds. You are conscious of smells. You are conscious of taste. You are conscious of tangible objects. And you are conscious of your thoughts, of your mind. Okay? Six general kinds of consciousness. Okay? It's general awareness. It never stops. Mike Tyson can knock you out. You're still conscious on some level. You know, you're still like having a ringing in your ears and some kind of blissful feeling. Okay? It never stops. According to Buddhism, it has existed with no beginning and it will exist with no end. That consciousness will go into the Buddha. When you become a Buddha, you'll still have consciousness. Okay? Except it'll be a pure consciousness. Okay? What is number four? Poor number four, it got called a lot of weird names by people. It's called Duce Samskara. Say Duce. But go ahead and write it. Ujjayi is a synonym for cause. I mean, anything that causes something else, anything that makes something else happen is called a duce in general, okay? It's called a duce. How is duce defined in the Abhidhamma Kosha? Very, very profound. Duce pumbo shile shen, it says in the root text. I'll call them factors, okay? Other factors. Factor because it does something. That's all. Other factors. The definition in the Abhidhamma Kosha is Duce Pumbo Shile Shen means Duce is all the other stuff. Okay? After you've got those four, the other four, 1, 2, 3, and 5, everything else about Tassi is Duce Ki Pumbo. That's all. It's defined like that. Everything else about you is, I think they should have called it grab bag heap. You know what I mean? It means all the other stuff about you that wasn't covered in the other four. And that's how it's defined. Okay? It's just the other stuff. You can call it other stuff, okay? That makes up a person. Now, what's in the other stuff, okay? According to the Abhidhamma system, and other systems are similar, you have a main mind, which is your consciousness, your awareness. Okay? Just the fact that you're alive, aware, is number 5. But you have 46 distinct mental functions going on. For example, the capacity to feel things, the capacity to make discriminations, the capacity to concentrate on an object, the capacity to move your mind to another object, and like that. There's a whole bunch of other, the capacity of will. Okay? Even amoebas have these things in their mind. According to Abhidhamma system and all Buddhist systems, you have main mind, which is number 5, and then you have a whole bunch of mental functions, separate parts of your mind, okay, called mental functions. In the Abhidhamma system, there are 46 of them, 46 mental functions. 44 of them belong in other factors. So what is in the other factors? 44. For example, faith is one, jealousy is one, anger is one. Okay? Different mental functions. Okay? 44 of the mental functions are in grab bag number 4. Okay? Out of the 46, 44 got thrown into number 4. What else is in number 4? The idea of Tassi. Because that's also a part of Tassi. The concept, Tassi. Tassi is in number 4. Okay? The idea, because that's part of her. And things like that, her impermanence is there. Okay? Concepts are in number 4. Okay? Why am I getting into this? If you are, you know, a normal thinking person in this class, I would start wondering, how come only 44 of the mental factors made it into number 4? Where did the other two go? Okay? Where did the other two go? Supposedly, the 5 heaps cover every piece of you. Every part of you, from your eyebrow to the irritation you had yesterday, is included into the 5 heaps. Where did those other two mental functions go? Okay, I heard somebody ask this question in India 25 years ago. You know, it was really cool. And here's the answer. All right. This is a verse from the Abhidharma, and I'd like you to write it down and memorize it. Okay. Okay. Got it? Say, Kogomare. Kogomare. What's that mean? Anybody remember? You don't have to carve it, just write it. That's what Tibetans say when someone's like... Okay, say Tsope. Sawa.
Girwa.
Dung. Okay.
We asked the question, just to remind you, what happened to the other two mental functions? There's 46 in the Abhidhamma system. By the way, other systems have more, okay? Slightly more. Why? What happened to the other two? They are here. And here. Okay. And the big question is, you know, been asked throughout the centuries, why did Lord Buddha take the trouble to give these two mental functions the big status of being their own heap, all by themselves, okay? There's 46 mental functions. Two of them get singled out as being extraordinary. You know, they get to be their own heap. If you think about it, there would have been three heaps, you know, main mind, mental functions, and your body. But for some reason, the Buddha thought it was important that two of them should get this special status of being heaps all by themselves. And he taught throughout his life about the five parts of a person. He didn't say so much body and mind. He said five parts of the person. Why did he make such a big deal about feeling and discrimination? You know, why did he give them such a big status? He could have spent his life talking about mind and body the way we do. But he wanted to talk about five heaps. He wanted those two to be special. Why? This is the answer by Vasubandhu. Okay. 16 centuries ago. Okay. Tsepa means, this is tsepa, okay? You know, tsepa means debating or fighting or dispute, okay? Even in the monastery nowadays, that's called tsepa. Okay. Disputation? But it can also mean fighting, hassling, struggling against each other. Okay. Tsepa. Tsawa means the root. The root. Tsawar means the root. Gyurwa means here because they are the root of all fighting in the world. Okay? These two get to be their own heaps. Okay? These two get singled out. Why? Because they are the root of all trouble in the world. They cause all the struggle between human beings in the world. Why? Because feeling says, I like this, and I don't like that. Okay? This makes me feel good. That makes me feel bad. Okay? And then you struggle to get the things that make you feel good. And you struggle to get away from the things that make you feel bad, even if it hurts other people. And that's the root of all struggle in the world. All the wars that were ever fought in the world boil down to somebody wanting to feel good and not to feel bad. Okay? Every war, every suffering between two people, every divorce, you know, boiled down to, I want what makes me feel good, and I don't want what makes me feel bad, and if it means I have to do something to you, I will. Okay, so that's the root of all suffering. The root of all conflict is feeling and discrimination. Discrimination in what way? Master Vasubandhu and the first Dalai Lama in his commentary, they quote a lot of sutras that say, discrimination in the sense of, this is my religion, this is their religion, okay, for spiritual people. Then he says, for farmers, this is my field, this is my boundary, this is my wall, this is my fence, that's his field, this is my field, okay. That's his wife, that's my wife, that's his kids, those are my kids, that's his house, this is my house, that's his car, this is my car, his and mine, theirs and mine, okay. It all comes from Dushe. From that other heap, discrimination. The capacity, the habit of making distinction. This is mine, this is yours. I will fight for what's mine. Fight for your country, you know. Be patriotic. Do the Russians love their children or not, you know? Who cares? They're Russians, you know. You know what I mean? It's a separate thing. By the way, I mean, some people have thought that Buddhism somehow gets you to a point where everything melts together. There's no me, there's no my. Everything is non-duality, you know. Buddhists are one big happy us, you know. That's not true. Okay, I almost used a bad word, but I didn't.
Of course, Buddhas still make the distinction between you and me. You are suffering sentient beings. I am an enlightened being. I'm trying to help you. It's not like they melt into each other. Even people who are enlightened continue to have their individual mind streams and their individual identity. Why? Because you cannot collect karma for me, and your identity consists of your karma ripening. You are your karma ripening. I can't collect karma for you. You can't collect karma for me. We will forever be separate spaghetti strands stretched over eternity. You know, it's not true, and Buddhism never said that you become, as Time Magazine said, one with the cosmos, you know. You will always be separate from other people in that sense. You will be a separate individual, even after you reach Buddhahood. So there are so many Buddhas, and there will be one Buddha for every sentient continuum that now exists. There will be one Buddha, okay, eventually. Right? So it's not true that like you melt into other people. Buddhas still have discrimination. Buddhas still have feeling, you know. They happen to be feeling blissful all the time, totally blissful all the time, okay. But is it true that they just like go into some heroin drug stupor or something and they don't feel anything? It's not true. Is it true that the goal of Buddhism is that you shouldn't feel good or bad about anything? Not at all. You know, find me this person. I've been waiting, you know. I have a dental drill waiting for them, you know. You know, it's not true. It's not true. Of course, it's a Semgi Samangju in the lowest system of Buddhism. Every school of Buddhism says you will have feeling until for eternity you will have feeling. And it'll be, when you reach Buddhahood, it'll be a blissful feeling. So it's not like you're trying to wipe out your discrimination. It's not like you're trying to wipe out your feeling. You're trying to change them from impure to pure. And we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that later. Okay. So anyway, the first reason that those two mental functions out of 46 in the Abhidharma system got the status of being a whole separate heap is that they are the basis of all fighting in the world. All struggle comes from that. Me and you, and I feel good from this and I feel bad from this. Okay. Say Korwe Gyuchir. Rim Gyuchir. Korwe Gyuchir. Rim Gyuchir. When you start fighting, you collect bad karma, okay? Which sets the scene for your future suffering, okay? And in that sense, these two mental functions should get their own status because they are Korwe Gyu. They are the cause of samsara. They are the cause of this suffering world. They are the cause of the suffering world that you live in, okay? Because they drive you to hurt other people and collect bad karma. Okay? They drive you. They instigate you to collect bad karma. It's because you want to feel good that you do something improper. It's because you don't want to feel bad that you hurt somebody else to get away from them or to get them out of your life or something, that you yell at them, you ignore them, you hurt them. Okay? It's because of the distinction between me and mine. I want to be happy. I don't care if you're happy. This is my thing. That's not your toy. This is my toy. Okay? This is not only the cause of all struggle in our current world, it's the cause of all the future suffering worlds that you will ever live in. Okay? The continuation of this suffering life depends on those two mental functions. Okay? So if you think about it, number one here, which is the cause of all the hassles, is in the present tense. Korwe Gyu means future tense. You're setting yourself up for more suffering, okay? And these two are the culprits. These two are the villains, okay? In their impure form, please, okay? In their impure form, all right? Obviously, the feelings that a Buddha has, and the feelings and the discriminations that a Buddha makes, are not causing future suffering, okay? Number three. Say Rim Gyuchir. Rim Gyuchir. Master Vasubandhu points out that if you think about it, the five heaps are in order of subtlety. The least subtle heap is the first one. The most subtle heap is the last one. And that's another reason why you might want to take these two mental functions out and treat them separately. And then I'll explain more about that, okay? If you think about the five heaps, what's the first one? Your physical body. And there's nothing about you which is more unsubtle or gross. Like compared to your thoughts or compared to your reflection or compared to your meditation. The body is very obvious and gross, okay? It's not subtle at all, okay? What is the next most subtle thing about you is heap number two. What's heap number two? Your feelings. Why? Because so much of your feelings depend on the body. You see? My hand feels bad. My head feels bad. It's not your head or your hand. It's your feelings. But because it's so linked to your hand, and so linked to your head, you relate to them that way. So in that way, because they almost mix something physical, or they're so closely related to your physical body, we'll call them just a little more subtle than the physical body. Okay. How about discriminations? Discriminations are very gross. Okay, it takes almost like a very strong decision to say, this is his, this is mine. Okay, that's a very gross distinction. That's not like a very subtle state of consciousness. It's almost a big stupid hung bowl in a China shop state of mind. It's not very subtle at all. This is mine. This is his. This is good. This is bad. This is big. This is tall. He's my friend. He's not my friend. Okay? It doesn't take like a genius to make those distinctions. Okay? So that's number three. It's the grossest kind of mental function of that time. All the other mental functions are a little more subtle. But they're still saying things like, I want to be good, like willpower. I wish that this would happen. You know, I am about to turn my attention to something. You know, I'm going to think hard about that. You see, those are all mental functions. So they become number four because they are more subtle than that big hunky discrimination. Okay? And then number five is so subtle that when I speak about it, I'm not sure that you are even recognizing it in yourself. I'm not sure that you are even identifying it in yourself. It is your awareness. You've had your awareness your whole life, so you're not even aware of your awareness. You see what I mean? It's hard to think about your awareness. It's just the fact you're alive. It's the fact that where did it come from is kind of amazing. You know, why is a bunch of meat being aware? You see what I mean? It's very subtle. Thinking about your mind is very difficult. Being aware of your awareness is very difficult. You know, isolating your consciousness and looking at it is a little difficult because it's there all the time. You take it for granted that this hunk of meat called Michael Roach's body should have this awareness. Okay. Because you've never not had it. Okay. Yeah. It's like the weakest fat, okay? The first two are 100 times more important. I'm just trying to cover the verse for you, okay? I would have left them out, but it would have ruined the meter, okay? Okay. Also, I'm not allowed to leave things out, okay? Apparently some omniscient being thought it was important. Okay. Say Semchung. Semchung means mental function. How many in the Abhidharma system? 46. Okay. Semchung. Nam means all the Semchungs, all the mental functions. Le means of all the mental functions. Okay. Le means of, here in this case. Of all the mental functions that there are, 46 different states of mind, Sorwa, which means feeling. Okay. Dung means and. Duxie means discrimination, the ability to discriminate between things. Heaps number two and three, right? Lokshik means they were isolated. They were picked out. Okay? They were isolated.
As what? As pumbos.
As heaps.
Okay? Pumbor means
they got picked out. What do they call that in English? They got... No, it's when you single out. They were... Lokshik is singled out. Okay? Singled out is a good translation. They were singled out to be pumbor.
Okay,
to be their own heap, you know. Shak means he did that.
Who?
Lord Buddha. Okay. Now I'll translate it for you, very slow. Okay. Rimgyu Chia means because they are the basis of the order of the five heaps. Rim means order in this case. Gyu means basis. And Chia means because.
Okay. So I'll give it to you.
Tibetan syntax is pretty much backwards from English syntax. We'll start at the back. The Buddha isolated out.
Singled out? Let's use singled out. Okay.
You hate it when I do that, right? The Buddha singled out of all the mental functions. Feeling. And discrimination. To be their own heaps. For three reasons, okay? That's not stated here, but it's understood. For three reasons. What? Number one, they are the root of all conflict in the world. Number two, they are the cause for all your future suffering life. Z, maybe. Okay. I don't know which life you're on.
Okay.
And three, they help explain the order of the five heaps. They relate to the order of the five heaps. Okay. And that's not very important. You know, the subtlety, that subtlety idea. Okay. Rimgyu means, reason number three is they relate to the order of the five heaps. Okay. They are important to take out and treat, single out, because when you explain the heaps, you can go in increasing subtlety. Okay. That's all. All right. Why did we even get into this? What I'm trying to point out, I threw in this Abhidharma stuff, okay? Why? What I'm trying to point out is that Master Shantideva moves on from the body and mind directly to feelings when he discusses the emptiness. That's his next section of the ninth chapter. He felt that feelings were so important that he wanted you to understand their emptiness especially. Okay? So he moves on to the idea of the emptiness of your feelings. Okay? It's very, very important. If you're really going to get enlightened, if you're really going to stop suffering in this life, you have to understand the emptiness of your feelings. You must begin to understand the emptiness of your feelings. What feelings? How you feel when the boss comes in and starts screaming at you. Okay? How you feel about anything in the world that you don't like. I mean, I like the emptiness of my feelings because this gives me immediate ammunition to achieve happiness in my life. Okay? If you understand the emptiness of your feelings, you can immediately start to be happier. And that's the whole reason I'm in this room. You know what I mean? I mean, I have this theory that everyone gets up to be happy in the morning. You know what I mean? Some people are worse at it than others. Okay? Depends on what dawa you have, right? I mean, most of us are burdened with this albatross of called Western worldview, which doesn't work. But anyway, everybody gets up and tries, right? And then they get home and sleep in more suffering than they were when woke up. But everyone's trying to be happy, you know. You are seeking to feel good. I mean, that's the goal. Buddhism, by the way, doesn't say that you have to, you know, the goal of Buddhism is to be some stoic vegetable. You know, you just sit there and don't feel good or bad. That's okay. That's the goal of Buddhism. That assumes that you can't do anything about it. The goal of Buddhism is not to sit there and put up with the crap of the world. It's to remove the crap of the world. Okay? It's not, the goal of Buddhism is not to sit in a corner and not feel anything or to be happy when crap happens. Okay? It's not true. That's not the goal of Buddhism at all. Buddhas are not sitting in their Buddha paradises because they've learned to put up with crap in an ultimate way. It's not the goal of Buddhism. No, I mean, people think that. You know, people think you're supposed to sit there and not feel anything, and that's the goal of Buddhism. It's not that. Of course you want to feel good. Who feels best in the universe? Buddhas. Okay? Yeah. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the difference. Okay? We're going to rip feeling apart. Okay? If we get time. All of them are raw data. Just what level are you on? You see what I mean? Seriously. It's a good question. Everything, the basis of all of them is raw data. They would all be there. They'd be in each of them. Then. Okay. Later. In the break. Come up to me in the break. Okay. So feeling is, you have to, I mean, for me, if Buddhism can change anything immediately, okay, I understand you're saying I can change my death. I understand you're saying I can change my old age and my sickness. But in an immediate sense, can understanding emptiness change my level of happiness in this life? Because frankly, that's the most immediate goal for all of us. You know, I can talk about death. Not more than a few people in this room believe they're going to die today. Okay? You're not worried about it that much. You know, like you have this vague uncertainty and apprehension about it, anxiety. But nobody in this room is definitely sure they're going to die tonight, unless you've made some plans that I don't know about. Okay? But anyway, feeling, you know, if I say, here's a thing that if you understand the emptiness of this thing tonight, you can immediately start to have more happiness tomorrow. You know, that would get, you know, your ears up, you know, like, okay, what? You know? I mean, that's the emptiness of your feelings, okay? Really, you want to be happy. You know, that's really what you want. That's why people get out of bed, and that's why very seriously depressed people don't get out of bed. They just gave up, you know? You get up, you literally move out of bed in the morning because you seek some kind of happiness. You want to feel good today. That's why you put the legs down on the floor. You know, the feet on the floor. You know, that's why you move from under the covers, however slowly it goes. That's why you get up, you know. And that's why you move. That's why you get in a car, that's why you get in the subway, that's why you go to work. It's why you do anything. You want to feel happy. You want some kind of happiness, okay? So, we have to discuss the emptiness of your happiness. The emptiness of your feelings. Okay, this exercise has a name. Okay, we've done a couple of Madhyamika emptiness examinations. We examined the pen. We examined you. We examined your body. We examined your mind. Now we're going to examine feelings. Okay, but all of this method that I'm on to tonight is called Temba. Say Temba, Nyershak, Shi. Temba, Nyershak, Shi. Temba means to remember. Nyershak, Nye means close. Shak means to put. Shi means for. I'll give you the translation that I consider a lousy translation. So don't write it down, okay? These have been called the four close recollections. You know, when was the last time you saw close recollection in the New York Times? I don't like to use words that don't have any meaning to me, you know. It means close, but close in Sanskrit means deep, okay? Deep, okay? Deep awareness, okay? Temba Nyershakshi, the four types of deep awareness, okay? A deep awareness. You'll see why, okay? You'll see why. It's a deep awareness of four things.
Okay. What are the four? Lu. Say Lu.
Deep awareness of your body. Okay, deep awareness of your body. What is a deep awareness, you know? Does it mean like when your stomach growls, you're like really aware of it or something like that? You know, we'll talk about it. Alright? We'll talk about what deep awareness means. Okay?
Second one, an old friend,
Say Tsorwa. Tsorwa. Your feelings, right? That's what we've been talking about all night. Right? Heat number two.
Wait.
Okay. Your feelings, okay? By the way, in this case, and I'll get into it more, deep awareness means an understanding of the emptiness of something. Okay? It's an understanding of the emptiness of something. It's an awareness of your body in the sense of understanding its emptiness more and examining its emptiness. Okay? And the same with feelings. Okay? What's the third one? By the way, to me, the second one is by far the most important. Where I collect my bad deeds is in the realm of, you know, do I feel good about this person or not? You know, am I happy with this situation or not? I mean, to me, the one of, to understand your feelings deeply would be a very important goal. And also, it's my feelings that I want to straighten out. You know, I want to feel good. I want to be happy. Okay. Third one. Say sem. Sem. Sem means mind. Okay. Deep awareness of your mind means coming to an understanding of the emptiness of your mind. All right? Coming to an understanding of the emptiness of your mind, being able to examine your mind to see if it is empty or not. Okay? When we're going to go through these four exercises, all right? Tonight. Maybe you get home, maybe you don't. Okay. Hey, Che. Che. Che, as you know, means Dharma, and one of the meanings of Dharma, which has 9 or 10 distinct meanings, is things, stop, other things. Okay, so anything that's not included in the first three meditations, or the first three awarenesses, or the first three analyses, we'll call the analysis of things, the deep awareness of objects. Okay, the deep awareness of objects. All right. I'll start to go through these four exercises with you. In the ninth chapter, by the end of tonight, we will have finished only the first three. Okay? And then next class we'll pick up on number four. All right? The goal of tonight is to get through the first three. All right? If you're going to examine your body and to examine its emptiness, here are the steps you'll take. By the way, here's the thing spelled out again. You don't have to write this. You already have it. Okay? You already have it. It's what I just wrote. Body. And then Dharma Nirshak is the same. It's a close examination of the body. I don't mind if you put on your homework the four and then just say single words under that. That's okay. Because it's all going to be, it's a formula, right? The deep awareness of your body. Deep awareness of your feelings, the deep awareness of your mind, deep awareness of everything else. Okay? What is involved in examining your body to see if it's empty or not? We actually did it last week. We did, I mean last class was Lu Jemba Nersha. We finished that. What did we do? I'll go over it with you. You, by the way, this is you want G.I. Jane or not? Okay, you asked for it. You're like 70% done, okay? So, bust ass for a few more classes. This is where a lot of people stop doing their quizzes and stuff like that. Come on. You know, you're going to be whining for 2 months, there's not going to be any classes. And you'll be wishing you had done more stuff, you know? You'll be sitting there at home and you don't have anything to read because you didn't do it. Okay, just work hard. I mean, forget sleeping for a few. I mean, you got like one more week. Okay, so just work hard. You know, don't be wimpy. You go to work for 8 hours, 10 hours. You work 50, 60, 70 hours a week. Come on, you can give this 3 hours. All right. Say cha-chen.
Lu-dang. Cha-she. Yen-la. Rangshin, Mepar, Tenla,
Appa. Okay. Cha Chen means the sum of the what do you call it? The whole, as opposed to the parts. Okay, Chacha means the whole, as opposed to the parts. The sum total, you can say. Okay. Chachen means the thing that has the parts, meaning the whole. When you are examining the emptiness of the body, what do you guess the whole is? Your body. Duh. Lu. Okay. Okay. Lu. That's a trick question. Okay. Chachen Lu. Body. Dung means and. Okay. Chashe means the parts. Chashe. Chashe means the parts. What are the parts? Your arms, legs, head, torso, etc. In Tibetan they're called yenlak. In this case I would translate it as components. Sometimes it means limbs. Okay. But there's too many here. I mean, it's including the hairs in your eyebrow and every wrinkle on your face and, you know, all the stuff on your teeth. And it's too much to call limbs, I think. Because limbs in English means your arms and your legs. So I don't want to use that word. I would say components, okay? Yenlat. Rangshin Mepar means it does not have any nature of its own. They do not have any nature of their own. Who don't have any nature of their own? The whole and the parts. Who's the whole? My body. Who's the parts? My fingers, my toes, my head. Okay. Don't they have any nature of their own? Sure they do. My head has the nature of being a head. My fingers have the nature of being a finger. Nature here must mean some kind of special kind of nature that they don't have. What's that? From their own side. They don't have any nature from their own side. If I didn't have the karma to see them as a head, I wouldn't see them as a head. I would see them as a vast plain covered with gigantic redwood trees through which I, the flea, must cross in order to get to the dandruff which I like to eat on Michael Roach's head. Okay? All right? If it were self-existently a head, he wouldn't be in that forest looking for food. Okay? Of course it's not self-existently a head. Of course it has no nature of being a head. Okay? From its own side. It has a nature of being a head for Michael Roach because I'm forced to see it that way. The flea, or you know those big things they show in the pictures, you know, they look like monsters that are eating the dandruff in your hair all the time. I got a lot of them. To them, obviously, it's not a head. It's a vast field of good food, you know. All right? With an occasional tree. All right. And that's the emptiness of my head. Okay? Of course my head does not have any nature of its own. Mepar tenla apa means you decide it. You establish it. You figure it out. Okay? That's the first step in what we call the deep awareness of your body. Okay? I mean, if you went around realizing that your head was only your projection, that would change things. Why? I would rather project Manjushri's head. Okay? I would rather it be golden with this long, thick black hair. You know? Of course. Alright? With gold jewels in it and everything. You know? And eternally blissful. You know? That's what the importance of the deep awareness of my body. I have to understand the emptiness of my head. Because I want to get to a Buddha's body. So I must understand the emptiness of my head. And that's called, that exercise of establishing the emptiness of my head and my other parts is called the deep awareness of your body. And we did that already. Okay. Did the atoms have any nature of their own? No. Do atoms make up the world? No. Does science work for human beings' happiness? Not at all. You make new machines to create the same old suffering. You know? I mean, in the caveman days, they were hitting each other with rocks. And now they got these really sophisticated atom bombs. Same thing. Same story. You know? Exactly the same story. It hasn't moved an inch towards more happiness. You know, you can have a car, you can have a subway, you can have a 586 or a 486 or a Pentium Plus computer. But it doesn't make you happier. Not necessarily happier, right? In the hands of a Buddha, of course, makes them happy. But from their own side, that's not a solution, and it hasn't made people happier. People are not happier than they were 50 years ago.
Okay.
They're probably not much more unhappy either. I mean, don't get into that romantic thing where everything was okay back in the Indian days. You know, their teeth were rotting out, they were fighting with each other, they were hitting each other with hatchets. You dig up arrowheads, what do you think they did with them? You know? Okay. I mean, that was popular when I was in college, you know. If we could get back to the forest, we'd be all right. Okay. That was the first step in that meditation. And here's the second one. Say, Dena Lu Milam Tabu La Chakpa Mirikpa. Okay. Dena means therefore. Therefore what? No, because your body doesn't have any nature of its own, and because its parts don't have any nature of their own, dena, the lu, the body, your body. Milam is a sweet word. Mi means to dream. Lam means a path. Milam is the Tibetan word for a dream. It's like a dream way. Okay? It's the Tibetan word for a dream. Milam.
Okay.
Rinpoche used to go to, we used to drive down to Washington once a month, and we would stop at Hojo, and he'd say, is it real milk or milam? Like, there was this thing called dairy dream. Like, like you always remember where you learn certain words, right?
Milam tabo means
like a dream.
Okay.
Chakpa means attachment. Chakpa means attachment. In this case, it can also mean to become, right? Mirikpa means it's wrong to do that. It's wrong to do that. Mirikpa. What's that mean? To translate the whole thing, okay? But you still have to write it, okay? It's wrong to feel attachment for the body. Because it's just like a dream. Because of number one. Okay. Because of number one. What was number one? The body and its parts have no nature of their own. Now, people go, you know, Buddhism says everything's a dream, you know. And then people are like, cool, that's really mystical, you know. Now I can do anything I want. It's all just a dream. You know, if I could just see that my life is like a dream, I wouldn't have to pay off my credit cards or anything, you know. I would be happy. You know, if life would just become like a dream, then nothing's real, you know. I wouldn't have any problems with my wife, you know. My credit cards wouldn't matter anymore. You know, I wouldn't have to pay my rent. It's all a dream. You know, that's not what he means, obviously, okay? You try to pretend it's a dream. The collection agency will still find you. Okay, they'll still garnish your wages and stuff like that, you know. You can't get out of it that way. What does dream mean here? It means right now, when the boss comes in and yells at you or someone hits you, okay, your perception of your body is totally wrong. You see your body as some kind of thing made of atoms that someone else has hit, and therefore you will hit the person back. They have damaged your body and you're going to hit them back. That's an illusion. The body you are defending doesn't exist. Okay? The body you are defending doesn't exist any more than that Miss America body you had 3 nights ago when you had too much popcorn and fell asleep. you know, and it was like, wow, you know, it doesn't exist, okay? That body doesn't exist, all right? This, the one you think is there is no more there than the one in your dream. So don't go defending it by hurting other people, okay? Don't defend a dream body. Don't beat up somebody in your dream who throws ketchup on Miss America's dress, because she is not there. She's not real, okay? The body you're defending doesn't exist. A body that they could hurt without your projections doesn't hurt, doesn't exist. What does that mean? If you're going to defend this body by hurting someone, you're proving that you're looking at the wrong body. Get it? I'll say it again. If you're going to defend your body by hurting someone else, you don't understand what your body is. There's no such body. The body you're defending doesn't exist. Why? If to save or protect this body you are hurting someone else, you're crazy. Why? This body's only getting hurt because you hurt someone in the past. The body you're defending doesn't exist. If you're hurting someone to protect this body, you don't understand what the body is. The body you're trying to protect doesn't exist. And you've been doing that for countless years. You've been protecting someone who's not there. Okay? Get it? The body you're trying to protect doesn't exist if you protect it by hurting someone else. Think of what the world would be like if everyone had this worldview, which is true, which is correct. Okay? You wouldn't have any conflict. There wouldn't be any more dirty feeling heap. You know? It'd be really amazing, you know. This is the correct viewpoint. This is Yandapitala. You know, if the whole world had this, there wouldn't be any trouble. And we'd all be like tantric deities in a short time. And no other viewpoint works, okay? It's profound. It's profound implications for society, for a culture, for Western civilization, okay? It's very profound. It could work, you know, if we taught people. If people learned it, it would be profound. The whole behavior of Western civilization would change. Okay? We're working on it. Okay. Therefore, it's wrong to get attached to this body, which is like Miss America in your dream. Okay? There's no such body. If you're hurting someone to protect that body, you don't know what your body is. You're looking at the wrong thing. You're looking at something which is a dream. It has no more existence than that Miss America that was in your dream a few nights ago. Okay? Very profound once you get to it. It doesn't mean you're not there. You know, Jehan is not sitting in the second pew. Sorry. You know, you can leave your wallet. You don't need it. You know, it doesn't mean that, okay? When I say like a dream, it means the body that you protect by hurting others, that one doesn't exist. Never did. Okay? All right, last thing, and then I'll give you some non-existent cookies and stuff. Say te kangsat kyang rangshin mepar trupa. De means because of all the above, okay? It means by that or through that, meaning because of what we just said. Kangsat means the person. In my case, Michael Roach. In your case, whoever you are, okay? It's very personal. When they say kangsat, think of yourself. Tasi, think of Tasi. Jay, think of Jay. Ann, think of Ann. Okay? Kangsat, the person. Kyang, also. Rangshin Mepa means you don't have any nature of your own. You don't have any nature of your own. Drupa means that proves it. That proves it. Okay, how do you... Let's translate it in normal English. Steps one, two...
Sorry.
Steps one and two prove that the person is there for that. Sorry. Let's try that again. Steps one and two prove that I don't have any nature either. How's that? Okay. Steps one and two prove that I don't have any nature either. When he says either, he means we started talking from the point of view of your body. And since we prove that your body doesn't have any nature, you don't have any nature either. What do you mean I don't have any nature? Am I myself or not? Of course you're yourself. Are you yourself from your own side? No. Because you could have been a vast plain covered with occasional trees, okay? To a different being with a different karma, okay? That's all. Therefore, you are not self-existent. Who cares? If I stand in front of a taxi, will I still get run over and still go to the hospital and still get a bill? Yes, you will. Okay. So what's the point of talking about all this? If you can prove that you are not self-existent, if you can prove that you are just a perception forced on you by your past karma, you can change into a Buddha. You see? If Ann Lindsay is not self-existent, then Ann Lindsay can become a tantric angel. Okay? That's cool. That's the whole point. If you can prove it about your body, it applies to me. And then I can become an enlightened being. Okay? That's important. Okay. All right. Take a break there and then we'll finish. We're on to the deep awareness. We finished the deep awareness of the body. We're going to get into the deep awareness of your feelings. Okay. You've already written the name of it, so I'm just giving it to you again. Say Tsorwa, Demba, Nyershat. You already wrote that, I'm not going to go through it again. It's the deep awareness of your feelings. It's when you have a feeling, looking into the emptiness of it. By the way, I also want to clarify one other thing. Is it wrong if someone attacks your body to defend what you perceive as your body? No, it's not wrong. Okay, the Buddha did it. You know, the Buddha even forcefully stopped people from hurting his own body and other people's body. Why? Mainly to protect them from bad karma. Okay, because of compassion for them. So you must protect people who are being hurt. That's a bodhisattva commitment you have. It's all over Buddhism. It's your responsibility to be interested when people are suffering and to take even drastic actions to protect them. You're never allowed to do so with anger or with hatred. Okay? It can only be done out of compassion. And you do not collect bad karma if you do it that way. Okay? So if you see someone hurting someone, yeah, it's a non-self-existent body. And you're probably perceiving the wrong body at that moment. But it's quite proper and necessary, and it's your responsibility to help that person, but not with anger and not by creating new bad karma. Okay? If the person attacking them was your mother because she was gone temporarily crazy, you would find a way not to hurt them. Okay? There's always a way. I mean, most often there's a way. Okay? The Dalai Lama said, I heard him in 7 years in Tibet, when Brad Pitt said, if we take every worm out of this dirt that we're digging this foundation in, you'll never get your movie theater. And he said, you're a smart guy. You figure it out. You know? And he did. You know? So, you know, you can figure out a way not to hurt them and to stop them. Normally. Okay. Most of the time. Here's the steps in the meditation on the awareness of your feelings. This is the main subject tonight. How to get into the emptiness of your feelings. How to understand the emptiness of your feelings. Okay? Say, Torwe, Lowo, Rangshinki, Tupa, Gatpa. Sorwa means feelings. Sorwe means of feelings. Lowo means their nature. He uses a word that also means essence. Okay, I think because he wanted to avoid the word nature, because he's been struggling to get you to accept that they don't have a self-existent nature. So lowo can also mean their essence. Okay. Rangshinki Drupa you can think of as having a nature of their own. Gakpa means we deny that, we disprove that, we refute that. Okay? We deny it. Now I'll translate it for you.
Okay.
The first step in developing a deep awareness of your feelings is to understand that the feeling itself does not have a nature of its own. Okay? The feeling itself does not have a nature of its own. That's the first step. Okay? He gives two examples to clarify what he means by that. First, he starts talking about a feeling of pain. Okay? A feeling of pain. You can say the feeling of pain you get when your boss comes in and screams at you. Okay? That's my favorite example. Or the feeling you get when the dentist is drilling your teeth. Okay? That pain. Okay? If it had a nature of being pain from its own side, says Master Shantideva, it could never change. You would always feel just that bad. Okay? If the pain were coming from the tooth, if the pain were coming from your boss, it would never change. You would always feel just as bad as you did the first moment they started drilling or the first moment he started screaming. If the pain were coming from them, if the pain had any nature of its own, if the pain's nature were to hurt, got it? If the pain's nature was to hurt, it could never change. Pain itself is a projection. Pain itself is a concept, is a conception. You see what I mean? Pain hurts only because your mind is making it hurt. Get it? The thing called pain hurts only because your past karma is making you see it be hurting. Okay? That's very difficult. Alright? The nature of pain is not to hurt until your karma forces you to see it that way. It's very interesting. Okay? I'll say it again. Pain doesn't hurt from its own side. Pain doesn't have a nature of hurting until your karma forces you to see it hurt. It's very profound. Okay. If it did have a nature of hurting from its own side, it would always hurt you the same way. You could never change it. You could never get relief by taking anacin. Okay? Because that feeling has a nature of pain of its own. Okay? Which is not your projection. And it doesn't depend on your past karma. So you're stuck with it forever. Okay? But that's not the way the pain is. Okay? That's not the way pain is. You know that because pain goes away eventually. Okay? Pain goes away. That's proof it's not pain from its own side. That's proof that pain doesn't have a nature of hurting from its own side. Pain hurts because somebody else is making it hurt. Who? Mr. Karma. Okay? Mr. Karma is making pain hurt. It's very profound. If that were not true, then pain would never get more or less. It would always be the same. If pain was hurting from its own side, it would never change. That's Master Shantideva's discussion of pain. Now he talks about pleasure. He says, and think about it, if pleasure was coming from its own side, if pleasure felt good from its own side, then imagine a mother whose only child had just died. Okay, he says, imagine a child whose only mother, a mother whose only child had just died. Okay, think about a mother whose only child had just died and the grief they're feeling, the suffering, mental suffering. If pleasure existed in itself, if pleasure felt good from its own side, then you could give them a nice cookie and they would feel very happy. Okay? I'll say it again. If pleasure felt good from its own side, then you could give them a cookie and they'd feel their grief would just disappear immediately. Okay? Why? Why do I say that? Because if pleasure felt good from its own side, it would be 100% pleasure. You see, our pleasures are always mixed up. You know, our pleasures are always like half pleasure, half pain. Now pleasure, tomorrow less pleasure. More pleasure tomorrow, less pleasure today. Our pains are, Marvin and I were talking about it, you know. Every experience you have in this life of pain or pleasure is almost always mixed up with some other component of the other thing. You can't get a perfect pleasure in this life. There's a joke in Tibetan. If Cheerios really tasted good, then if you ate two bowls, it would be twice as good as eating one. And if you ate four, it'd be four times as good. And if you ate six boxes at one sitting, right, it'd be 24 times better, you know, if it felt good from its own side. But that's not where it's coming from. It changes into pain around the third bowl, I know. Okay? Okay? Why? If the Cheerios were good from their own side, it should be true that I feel three times better on the third bowl. But something else shifts. The good karma is declining. The bad karma is asserting itself, like airplanes waiting in the runway. And I start to feel bad. It's not coming from the Cheerios. They're not so bad. You know, it's not like they decided to taste different. You see? It's not like they decided, let's make his stomach hurt now. Okay? They don't make these decisions. Somebody else is calling the shots. It's Mr. Karma. Okay? And that's what you have to understand. Feeling, so that's his argument. By the way, those two are on your homework, okay? His argument about pleasure, that it doesn't feel good from its own side, is that if a mother had lost her only child and felt so bad, and if you had a cookie that was good, if it tasted good from its own side and made people happy from its own side, then it would be 100% happiness. Never mixed up with bad, and when you fed it to her, her sadness would go away. And he's giving that example because that's not the case. Okay? At least no mothers that I know. Okay? Alright. Here's the second step. By the way, you can do these meditations in December and January. Okay? I'm going to go do a retreat, and I encourage you to do a retreat. And if you want to, we can talk about how to do it and stuff like that. But I think it'd be very good if each person who's training themselves here could do like two long-term retreats a year. Okay, that would be a goal, nice goal. I'll get to you. Okay. Say Teigyu, Rashingi, Truba, Gakpa. Teigyu, Rashingi, Truba. Gakpa. Daegyu means the cause of that feeling. The cause of the feeling. Rangshingi Drupa means it has some nature of its own. Gakpa means we deny it. We prove that it's not true. Gakpa means we prove that it's not true. So I'll translate for you. Step number two in the meditation called the deep awareness of your feelings is to prove that it's not correct that the causes of your feelings have any nature of their own either. We finished the nature of the feeling itself. Now we're talking about, do the causes of your feeling have any nature of their own? Okay. That's the next step in figuring out that your feelings are coming from your past karma. And not from the people you're mad at, okay? Or the people you desire, all right? They're not coming from that. What are the causes of an act of feeling, okay? What are the causes of the act called feeling good or feeling bad? We can talk about it in terms of what we call strange encounter of the third kind, okay? Strange encounter meaning three things have to come together. There has to be an encounter between three different elements. Three things have to happen for you to have an experience of pleasure or pain. Okay, for you to have a feeling, three things normally happen. And here I'm going to concentrate on physical feeling, you know, like feeling good physically. Okay. A, There has to be an object. Okay, an outside object. Like a pretty picture. Or a really good tasting Michael and Zoe strawberry health protein shake.
Like that. Okay.
Has to be an object. All right. That's the object. Okay. Then there has to be a sense organ, which is the cells on the top of my tongue. Okay? According to Abhidharma, there's certain cells sprinkled around the top of my tongue and around my mouth, and they make me taste things. Then there has to be the consciousness of the taste, you see? There has to be an awareness of the taste. It's no good if my tongue feels it, if I've been knocked out by Mike Tyson. You know, you can pour the shake down my mouth, and I won't, like, be licking my lips, okay? So there has to be the object, which is the shake. There has to be the sense organ, which is on the tongue, the cells on the tongue, the taste receptor buds or whatever. Jim can tell us later. Yeah, okay. And there has to be an awareness of the taste. Okay, those things have to happen. When those three things convene, we call it the convening, rekpa, which is, by the way, why step number 6 in the Wheel of Life is called contact, meaning the convening of those three things. Step number 7 in the Wheel of Life is feeling. Then you get a feeling. Then you say,
tastes good.
That's feeling, okay? But those three things have to convene first, okay? The next step in this meditation about the emptiness of your feelings is to see if those three things have their own nature or not. Got it? Okay. We'll start with the shake.
Okay.
I'm going to finish it one way or another. After class, I never get a chance. If people want to talk, I have to go in the car. Okay. Does it have any nature of being delicious from its own side? No. Why not? I'm sure there's people in this room who would find this disgusting if they tasted it, okay? Okay. That proves that the tastiness is not coming from its own side. Very simply, okay? Okay. Are my taste buds coming from their own side? No. Why not? I'm going to lose them. Okay? They will lose their ability to taste. If the ability to taste were coming from their side and were not dictated by other events, they would always be there. I could keep tasting for hundreds of years. Okay? But they are not feeling from their own side. They are not tasting from their own side. They're tasting because I have the karma for them to taste. Okay? And as I get older, they will lose their ability to taste. And then you get into heavier and heavier Starbucks coffee, more and more cigarettes, because you don't get the same taste. You know what I mean? You lose the ability to taste things. Why? If they had the ability to taste from their own side, they should always taste as well as they did the first day I had them. But they don't. Okay? Because that's not where the tasting is coming from. It's coming from my karma. And my karma is wearing out as I speak. You know, I lost a lot of karma between 7 and 9:20. And my taste buds are less affected than they were 2 hours ago. Okay? It's not like it happens every 3 years that, you know, Mr. Karma says, let's lower the taste bud 10%, you know. It's an instant-by-instant process. I had lost some in the last hour. Okay? The karma started to get less. Okay? So they are not self-existently tasting. Right. How about my consciousness of the taste? That's not self-existent either. That doesn't come from its own side either. It's also my karma. Why? I can't always get a Michael and Zoe shake when I want one. You see what I mean? If tasting something good were coming from its own side, it shouldn't depend on other things. I can get it any time I want. I can have it any time I want. Okay? It doesn't depend on my karma. Something like that. All right? Like that. So the causes for having the feeling are not coming from their own side. What's the point of discussing all this? I mean, for me, the important thing is it goes back to the chapter on patience. How do I stay patient with things I don't like? You know, when the things that happen during the day, the people I meet, somebody this morning dissed me, okay? Like, I get to be bigger, bigger lama, fewer, fewer people diss me. So when somebody disses me, it hurts more than it used to. You know, I used to get dissed all the time. Now I get dissed some of the time. You know, so somebody dissed me this morning. And so where did that come from? I don't like it. I really don't like it. I don't want it to happen. This person, I don't like this. I don't like this thing that's happening. And you have your own, you know. I don't like it. I don't like the thing. So why? Where is it coming from? You see, I have to understand, where is the object coming from? Where is the feeling coming from? Where is the eyes coming from? Where is the idea coming from? Where is the feeling of being dissed coming from? See, I have to think at all the causes. Where did the person come from? Where did my mind come from? Where did my ability to see them diss me come from? You know, where did all this stuff come from? And that's the whole point. You have to see that it came from karma. Can you stop people from dissing you in the moment that they're dissing you? No. Okay. Can you stop future ones? Yes. How? It's all in the reaction. It's all in the reaction. You know, if I can be patient and stop getting angry at them, I can slowly choke off all these people. And that's the whole point of Buddha's practice. You know, Master Shantideva said, kiss them goodbye. Because every moment you're patient with them, you just lost a few more of them. Okay? Eventually, you won't have to meet these people anymore. You see people who go around New York City and they swear everybody's nice. But you know better, right? Not true. Okay? They're meeting the same people you do. They're having a totally different experience of New York City. Why? Different karma. Why? They didn't react in the past. You're still reacting. As long as you keep reacting negatively, you'll meet these people. You'll be the person who runs into every creepy guy in New York. You know, and they'll just somehow thread this path through New York and meet every neat person in New York. You know, why? It's all in the reaction. Okay? You can't stop in the present moment meeting people who you don't want to meet. But if you're patient with them and you stop reacting, you will stop meeting them. This, again, is the only correct view. Okay? It's the only correct way to handle a situation in New York City. Okay? It's the only way that makes human beings happy in the long run. The current viewpoints of Western civilization on this question also are totally wrong. And no one will ever be happy as long as they keep up those viewpoints. And if we change viewpoints, then slowly everybody will keep meeting nice people. That's called a Buddha field, okay? A Buddha paradise. You know, you can get there. That's how you get there. Okay? You have to... I really would like to propose that we junk Western civilization's viewpoint up to now, okay? It's not such a big deal. And try this one. It works. Okay? It brings the human being what the human being seeks, and the others don't, okay? They don't. They just don't work, okay? Okay. So the second step in that meditation is to figure out, where are all these causes coming from? Where did this person come from? Where did my eyeball come from? Where did my awareness of my eyeball come from? Okay? Why am I meeting this person right now? Okay, that's the basic question. Why is this happening to me right now? You have to ask yourself. That's a part of the meditation on the emptiness of your feelings. Why? Okay? Mrs. Melvin said, it just happened. You know, Father Smith said, either it just happened or God was testing you, you know. No thanks, you know. And I asked somebody the other day, do we have to keep meeting these people? They said, you know, do you want to keep getting run over by cars? You see what I mean? It's not a test. It's crappy karma. And you can stop it. Okay? You don't have to get tested anymore. It's enough. Okay? We got tested 40 years. Enough crap. I passed or flunked. I don't care, but I'm tired of it. Okay? I don't want to meet the test anymore. All right? I've tested enough. Okay. Day? Day? Mikyu? Rashinki? Dupa? Kakpa? Day means feelings is. Of feelings. Feelings. Mikyu means the thing they're focusing on. The thing that the feelings are focusing on. Okay. In the case of a delicious bagel from Al's cheese shop, it's a good taste. You see what I mean? A delicious bagel. A bagel. That's the mikyo, okay? Of the feeling. If I like it, it's the bagel or the taste of the bagel. Get it? Okay? De mikyo. Narsingi drupa means has its own nature. It is tasty from its own side. Okay? Gakpa means we refuse that. We deny that. It's not true. Okay? Why? Somewhere in the world, I always say this, there's a culture where if you don't put a bagel on the shelf for a week and it gets really hard and crusty, it's not considered good tasting. Somewhere in the world, good mothers take fresh bagels and put them away on the shelf for a week. Because in that culture, they don't taste good until they're hard. You see what I mean? I was in Mongolia, you know. This old monk, he's like 90 years old, he gave me the great honor of fermented mare's milk, you know. And he had a big bowl of it, you know, and he said, here, you know, I'm going to give you my only bowl of fermented mare's milk, you know. And, oh, you know, and he was very offended, you know, and I didn't want to offend him, so I'm like, but I would show up, you know, and I was like, and I had another monk with me, a Mongolian guy, and I said, here, you drink it, you know. And he finished two bowls in like a minute. And the guy had a gas can full of fermented mare's milk, and it was really... But you see, in that culture, milk is not delicious until you put it in a gasoline can and let it rot for a couple of weeks. You see what I mean? So the object is not... No, you laugh, but in Mongolia, they'd be laughing at you. Oh, they eat it. They drink it fresh. It's so stupid, you know? You know what I mean? It means it's not self-existent, okay? I mean, it's not tasty from its own side. Right? That's the emptiness of the object of the feeling. And you have to remember that. Okay? We kind of covered it in step number two. Here we're isolating it and talking about it specially. I mean, we're talking about... And again, use it with the people and the situations in your life that make you unhappy. Because this meditation on emptiness works right away. You know, those other ones are like slower. This one is cool. This one makes you happy right away. Why? Does it make fermented mare's milk delicious in this moment? No. But it does immediately address your reaction. You stop feeling upset. You stop feeling angry. You stop feeling stupid distaste for that thing. Why? Because you know who made it. I know who fermented that mare's milk before I got there. Michael Roach's karma. Okay, it wasn't that old monk. Okay, if it didn't taste good to me, it was Michael Roach's crappy karma who came there a few weeks before I got there and started rotting this milk. You know what I mean? Seriously. And stop blaming the guy. And stop blaming the milk. And your life immediately... What I'm trying to say is I wanted to concentrate tonight on the emptiness of your feelings because now you can immediately start to feel happier. You see? If you understand the emptiness of the things which piss you off, you'll immediately start to feel better. Why? Because if you feel bad, you are inviting them back. You see? If you get upset, if you get angry, if you feel hatred for them, that is mental karma. You are inviting the thing to come back. You are causing the thing to come back again. You know, a Buddhist has to stop reacting to the world negatively. You can't. Because every time you do, you create a seed in your own mind for that thing to happen to you again. It's over with. You can't feel upset anymore. You can't feel angry anymore. You can't feel hatred anymore. Because it's stupid. Because you know better now. Because if you want that thing to come back, then get upset or feel angry or feel some kind of hatred for it. That's the power of understanding the emptiness of your feelings. You see? If you understand the emptiness of your feelings, the last thing you'd ever want to do would be to get angry or to feel upset at the things which piss you off. And if you stop doing that, I swear to God, okay? If I had a Bible, I would. An Shantideva, okay? Master Shantideva. It works, okay? It really works. You will find less and less bad things in your life and more beautiful things will happen to you. Really, honestly, try it. Okay, you can always just check it out. Buddhism is very cool. You know, we're not afraid to say try it. It's not like pray to God and maybe it'll work and maybe it won't work. Okay? It's like, try it and it'll work. Okay? Just try it. The worst thing that can happen is that you won't feel lousy. Okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
I would personally say that Mikyo could be included in number two. You see? It's one of the three elements, isn't it? But I believe that Master Shantideva is making a stronger point by isolating it and saying, don't forget to pay special attention to the object. Who made that person at your office that you don't like? You did. Okay? You did. And forget all worldviews which tell you anything else because they don't work. You'll continue to be miserable your whole life unless you change over to this worldview. Okay? Last one. Say te yuchen rashingi
tupa kakpa.
Te means that, those feelings, of those feelings, same thing, right? Yuchen means the subject, meaning my mind, Michael Roach's mind. Okay? Yuchen means the subject as opposed to the object. Okay? Rangshingi Drupa means has some nature of its own, from its own side. Gakpa means we deny it. We reject it. Okay? To translate it, we deny. In the fourth step of this meditation, you deny that the mind which is having this pleasure or pain could have a nature of its own. Okay? Could be a mind from its own side. It's the answer to the question, not who made this guy at work that I don't like. It's rather the question, who put me here? Okay? You know? It's not asking, why is he here in my office at this moment, pissing me off? Who put me here to listen to him? Okay? Who put the subject here? And we deny that the subject is existing at random, or that it was made by some guy with a white beard, or some big bang put me there in my desk, okay? You put you there. Okay? You put the subject there. The subject doesn't exist from its own side. It was not created by some guy. It's not an accident without any explanation. It's not a big bang. Okay? Your karma put you there to listen to that guy saying those things to you this morning. Okay? Your karma puts you there. If you don't like it, fix your karma. Okay? If everybody did that, what would the world be like? Okay? Let's switch worldviews. Okay. All right. Last one. Where is that last one? How many last ones are there here? Say, Sakche. And then we really will finish because I have to have a hot day tonight. Sakche, sak means impurity. Che means has impurity. Okay? Sakche means it's impure. Impure. The last thing I want to talk about tonight is the difference between the way a Buddha feels and the way we feel. You see? We have to talk about that. What's the difference between the way a Buddha feels and the way we feel? We said that the goal of Buddhism is not to be like a vegetable sitting there without any feelings at all. And the goal of Buddhism is not to learn how to sit there and let disasters happen in your life and feel equanimity about them, you know. Of course you should hate them. They're stupid. They're bad. You should stop them. And you know that in your heart. You're not going to be satisfied if I tell you, you know, go home and have equanimity while all this crap happens to you, and while you get old and while you die. Just don't worry, okay? Watch it flow, you know? I think all these people should be locked in a room, you know, and they should let them watch the flow of the dental drill or something, you know? Like, it doesn't work that way. You know, your heart tells you that it doesn't work. It's not like that. What's the difference between our feeling and a Buddhist feeling? What's the difference between our discrimination and the way a Buddha discriminates? Let's talk about feeling. Okay, our feeling is sakche, which means dirty. A Buddhist feeling is sakme, which means totally pure. Okay. What's the difference? A Buddha has the deep awareness all the time. Okay. It is one of the Changchok Sodun. Say Changchok Sodun. Changchok Sodun. It's one of the 37 qualities of a Buddha. I mean, it's one of the 37 attributes that a Buddha knows how to do. A Buddha is constantly in a deep state of awareness about what's really going on when they have feeling. Okay? When something happens and they feel good, they understand the emptiness of it all the time. They always have this awareness, this deep awareness of what's happening to them. Okay? How does that relate to us? You can have that kind of awareness and stop having impure types of feeling. What's the difference between an impure type of feeling and a pure type of feeling? Okay? For us, on a level of our lives, it means if someone comes into you at work and says something bad to you, you get a bad feeling. You have to stop and do a Dhamma Nirshat. You have to go into a state of meditation, of awareness about your feelings. Meditation doesn't necessarily mean that you close your eyes and you put your thumbs up and you tell that guy, could you wait 5 minutes, you know, I'm going to meditate on you. You know it don't work that way. I mean, if you want to get him more pissed off, try it, you know. Nagarjuna said, you can have a state of meditation at work, you know. It's just a focus. It's a question of focus. You're focusing upon the person, you feel the anger or you feel the pain, not anger yet, right? You feel the pain come up in you, okay? And at that moment, you have to enter the deep awareness of feelings. You have to go into meditation on the deep awareness of those feelings, you know? You have to understand the emptiness of where this pain is coming from. You have to understand the emptiness of the guy. You have to understand the emptiness of his words. You have to understand the emptiness of your ears. You have to understand the emptiness of the consciousness which hears what the ears report. And most of all, you have to understand the emptiness of this situation. Now, why is this happening to me? Okay? The emptiness of it is, it's no other explanation except that this is happening because of my past karma. Okay? The last thing I want to do is get mad, because that is raw karma. You know, talking is a kind of karma. Moving is a kind of karma. Hitting somebody who bothers you is a kind of karma. But they are very weak compared to mental karma. You see, mental karma is much more powerful. The thoughts of anger, even if you don't say anything, even if you don't punch the guy, the thought coming strongly into your mind is Sembayiki Leyeno, 4th chapter, Abhidhamma Kosha, extremely powerful karma. Okay, you're already screwed up. Okay, you already set the scene for this person to come back in your life. Okay, and you will be unhappy. You'll just be unhappy. Okay, and then you won't get what you want. You want to be happy. So very important. You know, of all the objects in the world, for your present happiness, and for me, that's immediate. You know, I understand that I might take a future life on Pluto someday, or something like that. But it's so remote that I can't really relate to it very well. I can very well relate to the people who piss me off, you know. It happens every day. It happened this morning. You know, somebody dissed me. I felt bad. I don't want that anymore. How do I stop that? You must learn to go into the meditation of the awareness of the emptiness of your feelings. Okay? It's really cool. Try it. Try each of those steps. Okay? That's what Master Shantideva is talking about in this section. Okay. Next time, we'll get into the emptiness of your thoughts. That's the next step. It is the last homework question for tonight. It's difficult. I'm not going to lay it on you tonight. Okay. It's 9:40. I don't want to freak you. You know, I could do it and I wouldn't do it very well and you'd be asleep by the time we finished. Okay. Then we could meditate on the emptiness of your sleep. But so leave that one, okay? We'll do it on Tuesday and we'll shorten the rest of it, okay? We can do one or two questions, yeah? Okay. Excuse me? Yeah, what I mean to say by Sakchin is impure feeling means, David, you made a good point. Impure feeling means, very important, the kind of feeling that would make you do bad karma. Okay. The kind of feeling that would make you do bad karma. You can call it stupid feeling. All right. The Buddha used a nicer word, like ignorant. Okay. To put it in plain English, it's stupid. Any kind of stupid feeling, the definition of a stupid feeling is one where you would hurt the person back. You would say something to them. You would hate them in your mind, which is the worst karma, you know. Of course it's important not to say anything and not to punch people. It is important. But for a Buddhist, and much more subtle and much more difficult, you have to get as quick as a cat, you know. The minute your mind wants to think a bad thought, you have to catch him. You know, you have to turn around on him and say, stop. You know, this crap about express your anger is crap. The minute you express it, you've already had intense mental karma. You've already collected a lot of mental seeds to see this person again. Okay? That's not true. Okay? Does it mean it's not useful to explain to someone why they're making you angry in a non-angry way? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not beneficial to get angry, to let it out or something like that. You should analyze it and stop it. And I don't mean to bottle it up and never explain to the person why they're making you angry. You should explain to them why they're making you angry. Probably it's better to wait a day or two. Okay? It's definitely better to wait a day or two. Because then you can do it without getting angry. Okay? Hopefully. All right? Yeah, Nancy. Continue what? What do you mean? Yeah. Right. Right. A lot of people have asked me that, okay? And it's kind of late to get into it. The idea of free will. It's occurred to a lot of people in the class that if your reasoning that you've given in this class for the last 6.5 classes is correct, it's beginning to sound like even our choices are projections. And in that case, they're not really choices anymore. They're kind of imposed on us by our past karma. They are also dictated by our past karma. We didn't have any choice but to make this choice. You see what I mean? And then that makes people feel like they're out of control or they can't get better easily because they're like pretty much trapped in their old karma. That's exactly the case. Okay, that's exactly the case. Okay, it's, you know, the Buddha taught, somebody asked him, what are the odds of coming back as a human against the odds of going to a hell rebirth? He licked his finger and he touched the ground. Okay, and he came up with a few pieces. There's one piece of lint there. Okay, and he said, that's the number of people who come back as a human. And he said, and count all the atoms of this planet is the number of people who don't make it back into the human realm. You know, and he was not exaggerating. Okay, that's the odds. It's very, I mean, yeah, you are under the control of your past deeds. You are a projection of your past deeds. And which choices you make are also largely dictated by your past deeds. So how could you ever get out? How long have you been here? Okay. Countless eons, I mean, zillions of years, literally, you know, to make it to this class is an unspeakable achievement, you know. It's unspeakable the karma you have. To hear this for 5 minutes requires so much karma, you can't imagine what you did to be in this class for 5 minutes. And that's why these classes will end, you know, and that's why we will be torn from each other, you know. The karma is extremely expensive. And we're using it, you know. It's extremely rare. And the odds of really getting it are extremely bad. And you have to try. You really have to try hard. People say, oh, do I have to meditate? And I'm like, no, you want to wander around the Moscow Hotel again for another zillion years. don't matter. I'm not forcing you. You know, it's bad. The odds are really bad. There is not much free will. And the odds that are spoken in the Lamrim about coming up a turtle, that's not an exaggeration. The odds are really bad. The choices you make are one of the four kinds of karmic results. It's called the it's the habit of doing that thing again. It's extremely difficult for any human being to change their karmic patterns. To do that is almost impossible. You know, much of the decisions you will make are forced on you by things that happened a long time ago. You know, extremely difficult. Okay. And the scriptures, that's what they say. You know, I don't like to talk about it much, okay? But we're different. We're going to get out in one lifetime. Why? Why? Because the words do have meaning. You do have the karma to hear them have meaning. You can get out of this thing, and ultimately you will, because the words have meaning, and you understand the meaning. And that's the perfection of wisdom. You see what I mean? The understanding of emptiness is thousands of times more powerful than the misperceptions we've been laboring under for all these centuries. You see what I mean? And that's why we have a chance. Otherwise it would be hopeless. You know, free will or no free will, if you can understand emptiness, gives you a very, very good chance. Okay. If on top of that you have the great fortune to study the secret teachings, you know, incredibly rare, you know, incredibly powerful and incredibly sweet. If you can get into that door, you know, if someone can truly initiate you into that, then your odds of getting out in this lifetime are real. You really have good odds. You know, then you can really do it. But you have to learn it properly, and the person has to know what they're doing. You know. And it's very, very difficult to get initiated into it. I'm not talking about the weekend initiations in New York City. Excuse me, okay? And I don't mean to criticize. I'm not talking about that. That you can do for $25. Go pick up a flyer at so-and-so, you know. Don't forget to bring a little thing on your head. You know, I'm not criticizing, but I am, okay? Not talking about that. That's not tantra, okay? I'm not talking about that. All right. If you can get into the real thing, then you have a good chance. Okay. You can't get into it unless you understand emptiness. Okay. Better to stop there, I think. Okay. All right.
You have been listening to A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.